It's the Popmatic Podcast.
That's pretty.
It's April 2014. I'm Brian, and joining me today are
Mike,
Crystal,
Greg,
Amanda,
Bill.
Clint, are you here?
I am here. Clint in body.
Clint is here in our million-dollar studio.
He's in the booth.
You know.
It's an awesome booth.
And so what happens in April, book gang?
April Fool's Day.
That's my mother's birthday.
Aww.
Hi, Mom. There'll be more parent action later. You have to listen to the end.
And my father's birthday.
Really?
Isn't it? My mom's birthday is in April.
Okay.
And Will Shakespeare's birthday, but I don't think he celebrates anymore.
Never heard of him.
Is he like 400 years old now, or how old is he?
And his death date, too.
I don't do math. Birthday? But
indeed, I think you're right.
Well, that works out nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
Full circle. Way to go, Will.
It's also National Poetry Month. If you read poetry, send us an email. Inbox just filled up. Oh,
you better go check that right now.
Okay. And the city in April also does the Cherry Blossom Festival, which is a celebration of Japanese culture. This was started back in 2009, and it's all day long. The idea is let's plant, I think it's 10,000 cherry trees in Nashville. And I'm not sure how closer we are to that goal, but we get a little bit closer every year. So this year, it's Saturday, April 12th. This podcast should post on the April 6th. It's from 9 to 10, there'll be a walk around the city looking at some cherry trees. That's free. It's open to the public. And then from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Japanese music, Japanese food, Japanese everything. I don't think there'll be one of those creepy guys that dates a pillow. I don't know what that's called. You guys know what that is? I don't think anyone like that will be there. I love it. You guys aren't nerdy enough to know what it is.
I'm staring at you.
Greg knows what it is.
I do not, actually.
All right.
I'll talk about that later.
I'll put a link in. So, the Consul General of Japan in Nashville is mad that I brought that up. No, but all the good things about Japanese culture will be at the Cherry Blossom Festival. And, Mike, you've been there before, have you not?
I have.
Anyone else been there?
I've walked by the cherry trees. But that's as far as I've gone.
I've done that, too.
I went there last year. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Like, they had a bunch of food trucks that served Japanese food. I had I spelled it out here, an okonomiyaki, which is kind of like a pancake that has, seafood and onions, and it was really good.
Excellent.
Say it again. Okonomiyaki?
What'd you say?
Did I get it right?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool.
So it's kind of like a crepe. Is it sort of like a crepe?
Yeah, it's crepe-ish.
Crepe-like?
Very savory, yeah, instead of sweet.
Like a creep who dates a pillow? I might cut that. So that is, what's funny, too, is, one of the coolest things that happens in Nashville is the Middle Tennessee Anime Festival, too. And that just keeps getting bigger and bigger every year. And I bet there'll be some anime people there, for sure.
Yeah, they had a booth of, you can buy anime stuff, so manga.
Good times. And we do a manga festival here at the library, too, which is happening or just ended, at least at the time that we're recording. So that's all day, April 12th. That's down at the front of the courthouse, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where the trees are. So.
It'd be hard to miss if you're inside.
Well, it's one of those things where I was just assuming, and then at the moment where I had to actually say it, I was like, should have fact-checked.
Yeah, I walked downtown. I'm like, I wonder where it is. Oh, it must be over there where all the music's coming from. And,
yeah, not a lot of Japanese music at the honky-tonks. You're going to get confused.
Yeah.
Down at Tootsie's, there's going to be some no theater. it's like their worst draw all year.
I would go see that. That would be hilarious.
All these tourists just stand up and walk out.
Say no to no.
But what else is happening in April, Bill?
Well, come to the public library on April 12th at 2 p.m. to see Sweet Revenge. Now, Sweet Revenge deals with a woman played by Stocker Channing, whose goal is to buy a new Ferrari. It's the way she does it that makes the film interesting. Sam Watterson co-stars in this totally offbeat film from 1976. It's directed by Jerry Schatzberg, and we also have an interview with Jerry Schatzberg, or Mr. Schatzberg, in our Legends of Film podcast. Interesting man. He directed Scarecrow, Panic in New Park, The Seduction of Joe Tynan, Honeysuckle Rose. So one more time, come see Sweet Revenge Saturday, April 12th at 2 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library. It's free.
All right, so
tough room.
As we have established, April is Poetry Month, and our colleague Karen, who is a sometimes guest on the podcast, has coordinated for the past, as this is our third year, we do a poetry as art display in our department. So your Pop-matic podcasters pick their favorite poems and then interpret them through art. So you should come downtown the month of April and check out our sweet art inspired by poetry.
I just want to sit by it all day. It'll be very pretty.
What I do is I like to go to Goodwill and find old needlework and then just put it in the displays if it was something that I did.
Well, there's that too. You don't have to look at Brian's.
Or like I'll take someone else's old needlework and then spray paint it pink and be like, ah, look, it's art.
If you use glitter, I'm in. Let's do it.
I'll totally do that. all of a sudden, I'm not joking anymore. Yeah, okay.
Little needlework coming right up.
Let's do some art.
This all sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, that's Poetry as Art, PopMat in April. Mike, how do you celebrate Cherry Blossom Festival besides actually going to the festival itself?
Well, I cooked up a pair of delicious treats that may fill your belly here. I didn't think this through. Anyway, many moons ago, I went to see the Cherry Blossom Festival's website, and I was like curious to see if it's happening this year or when it is, because last year it was in March, but this year it's in April, which threw me off. I wonder if it has something to do with like the moon calendar or cherry blossom blooms or bloomy. But I went to their Facebook page, and they shared a website called Cookpad, which is kind of like a user-generated recipe website that's used by, like, I believe it was 80% of Japanese women ages 20 to 40.
Holy.
Use this website. It's pretty neat. Like, a lot of it's, like, really simple, which I like, you know, and I gravitate towards any recipe that says that they bake it for their husband or children. Because that means it's going to be either very meaty, very sweet, or both. Let's see. I have one to recommend called the Family Favorite Meat Miso, which involves ground pork miso soup udon. Quite tasty. Doesn't make a lot, but quite good. Very easy to make. One thing I really like about the website is that they use a bunch of like random symbols I never really see before, like a musical note, and it's like kind of really adorable. I mean, like, you know, this is totally good. Musical note, happy face. It's like, aw, well, shucks. And what's really neat also is that they'll use some of the symbols like as part of some of the ingredients lists. Like, you know, a lot of cookbooks, they'll be, you know, and now you add the salt, the pepper, you know, the cumin, whatever. And then I have to look up to see like how much, and this on this website, they'll just go, like, add all the star ingredients. And I look up, and there's all the star stuff. I add those. Simple. Effective. I like it. A lot of the ingredients are a little odd, say the least. But you can find a lot of the, in the Asian section of your local grocery store, like, you know, Kroger or Publix, have really good selections. But also there's a Sonobana Grocery in West Nashville off of White Bridge Road. It has a very tasty restaurant and a itty-bitty grocery store filled with many ingredients and tasty goods. I had like a roll that had red bean paste in it. Oh, I gotta go back and get that. Anywho, so I made a bunch of things from there and having a good time. But I was thinking, like, you know, a little bit of something more like difficult and in book form that I don't have to print out a recipe and, you know, or have it up in this iPad dealy and then the screen goes dark as I've got like things in my hand and have to, like, you know, unlock and stuff. So I was looking for a book and I found one called Japanese Soul Cooking, which is like, it's pretty cool. It's like got a bunch of like basic staple-y, you know, stuff that Japanese people like, and a lot of fried stuff, which is cool. But I don't have a frying thermometer, which is bad. I gotta get me one of those. Anywho, I'd like to recommend a recipe that I believe is called seared pork chops, but I forgot to bring the book with me, and so we can link it in the show notes later. What's really cool is that it's got this sauce that's basically like soy sauce, butter, and lemon juice, and it is outstanding. Like, I am not a chef by any means, and I was just like, oh. I must pour the sauce on everything. Must lick plate. It is awesome. And it's really cool because, like, the...
you just devolved.
You like, you like my joy face?
You just, turned into a Japanese cookie monster there.
Dirty cookie. One thing that I thought was neat is that, you know, instead of... They recommend that you, like, pound the pork chops really thin. I just bought thin stuff. And what was a lot of fun for me, because it involved fire or lots of smoke, is that they say that you're supposed to deglaze the pan using sake. And I was like... whatever, dude. And I poured in sake in the pan, and there was like the smoke and the heat and stuff from like hibachi restaurant. I was like, psss! And I was like, cool. I may just do this instead of actually cooking something next time.
It's like Iron Chef in your own kitchen.
I know. Super cool.
Iron cuisine.
Take it away, Ota. Or in this way, take it away, Bill.
I'm just going to talk about the legendary filmmaker Akira Kurosawa. And if you've never seen a film by the legendary filmmaker, Mr. Kurosawa, my first question would be, well, why not? I know that when people think foreign films and subtitles, it's a turnoff. However, for a Far Eastern director, Kurosawa has had a tremendous influence on the West, and by the same token, the West has influenced Mr. Kurosawa. Do you realize that The Hidden Fortress, directed by Mr. Kurosawa, was the major inspiration for Star Wars? The Seven Samurai was later reworked into the Western The Magnificent Seven, and also Dashiell Hammett's book Red Harvest was Kurosawa's film version of Yojimbo, which Yojimbo was based on. What I'm trying to say is that Kurosawa's movies are exciting. They're full of intrigue, fight scenes, all that good stuff Americans love. So, watch Akira Kurosawa films where East meets West, or vice versa. I also recommend the book The Films of Akira Kurosawa by Donald Ritchie. All good stuff. Who'd I pass it to, Amanda?
Dear Bill, I have never seen a film by Akira Kurosawa. Please don't hate me.
Konnichiwa. It's okay.
I've wanted to.
You would like a, well, Yojimbo's nice. It's 90 minutes, and that would be nice little.
Go epic. See Ran.
Yeah, oh, Ron's really good.
Yeah,
a Throne of I want to watch. I want to watch Seven Samurai. That's the one I've wanted to watch. But
Ron, is that how we say it in
Ron? It is. Yeah.
They're just saying it in a snooty way to say it.
Ugly American Ran.
Like yeah, in Nashville we say Ran.
I think I'm thinking of a different movie.
I don't know what y'all are talking about, but I watch Ran.
But I say, oh boy. But so that's In Color, really long, and based on, is it King Lear?
Yes.
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 Oh, you might have lost me with King Lear.
I promise you that. Ron is 10 times better than any film version of King Lear you've ever seen. Nerd's Honor.
Ooh, I got Nerd's Honor on that.
For real.
And that's the truth.
Yeah,
Bill says it's, then it's...
Akira Kurosawa's Dreams is really good, too. It's like a little vignettes.
And, is that his last film?
I believe so. It's one of his last.
No.
It's almost like we know stuff.
What's the last one?
Okay. I'm just learning so much.
It has a Martin Scorsese as a Vincent Van Gogh.
Oh, wow.
I don't want to see that now.
I say, now I'm traumatized. See, you traumatized with King Lear and Martin Scorsese.
No, it's like the actual guy. I mean, it's not like the style of Martin Scorsese. There's no blood or anything.
No, I know.
In Ran, there's all kinds of blood. it's like samurai warfare to the max. Right? All kinds of blood. Arrows. Well,
I'm going to have to get my viewing buddy to sit there with me. Then.
Blind flute player.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so I guess it's my turn to go next since I'm talking so much anyway. So we haven't talked about music yet, and so I'm going to talk about something really different and bring up Gwen Stefani. Now, Amanda, you say, Gwen Stefani is American, and she's blonde, and she's not Japanese. You are correct. However, I think it was her first album, I can't remember, but her album Love Angel Music Baby... that came out in, I want to say 2008. She took as her inspiration for basically the entire album the Harajuku fashion from Shibuya, Japan. And I'm going to butcher every name I say, so I just apologize right now. And so basically she had four Harajuku girls that were her muses and her imaginary friends, and they were named Love, Angel, Music, Baby. Those of you that don't know, Harajuku fashion is... basically like manga come to life. I mean, there's several different styles. You can do like the gothic Lolitas, and you can do the sweet Lolitas, and you can do like the costume or the cosplay is what they call it, and you can do traditional Japanese, but usually they mix a bunch of that all together, and then they have like the really cool hair and a lot of jewelry and makeup. And
I do it a lot at home, but I never go out.
Aww. Mm. I want pictures.
Dead silence. Dead silence.
I want pictures. Yeah. Right?
Nobody.
Not surprised.
No, I can totally picture that, and I'll never sleep tonight.
You traumatized Mike. And she even has a song on the album called Harajuku Girls. So that I will admit that that's the first time that I've really was made aware of I'm not a fashionista. I don't follow all the latest trends in clothing. And she has caught some flack for it, for the fact that a white lady has an entourage of four Asian chicks, and a lot of the Asian community is up in arms that she's, you know, bringing them down. And I don't know that that's true. I mean, she says they're friends. It's imaginary. It's all supposed to be, you know, in fun. And she's very respectful of their culture. Like, she loves that style of fashion. So that's why she chose to use it. It wasn't derogatory by any means. And if you are curious, we do have a couple books. We have some manga books called Gothic and Lolita Bible. We don't have them all, but good news. You could probably try to get them through Interlibrary Loan. And then we also have one called Gothic Lolita Punk. Which is also, there's also that punk element to all the Harajuku style. So it's very cool. I don't know that I would ever have enough guts to, like Brian, actually walk out of the house with it, but
it's a Home Alone thing for me.
It's just a hobby here and there. So definitely, if you go online too, you can check them out and see what I'm talking about if you have never seen Harajuku fashion, but it is very, very interesting.
So I've actually been to the Harajuku district.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
And so it totally runs the gamut. It is. It's very much like the anime style, but it can also be just anything referencing pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of Brian because one of my favorite groups that I saw in the Harajuku district was this group of, like, I guess a rockabilly, like, dance group. And so they were all wearing the same style, like, bomber jacket that Brian has on right now. Like, just head-to-toe denim. And so
Texas tuxedo.
That's fancy.
So you could totally fit in there if you wanted to. You can even leave your house.
Oh, well, no, I'm usually like, well, never mind.
Oh, man.
Different podcast. I was making a joke that I dress up, you know, like a gothic Lolita doll when I'm home alone, right? And it was a joke, but obviously, you know, maybe that didn't work as a joke because I threw that out there. Everyone's just like, rip.
I mean, oh, yeah,
we
know
he does that.
We want pictures. That's all Mike and I want. We just want to link to pictures in the show notes. And it's all for the game until it happens.
Okay, so if you listen to this podcast with any regularity.
Hi, Craig.
You probably know I'm a little obsessed with cats. Well, so are many citizens of Japan. One example of this fascination is through the Maneki Neko. Sorry for butchering that. We know it as the Lucky Cat or the Fortune Cat. And it's a common Japanese figurine, a talisman, lucky charm. It's these days, they're usually ceramic, and they're often believed to bring good luck. Yes, it is not waving, it's beckoning. I happen to have one in my massive cat figurine collection, and you should too.
You're not joking though, right?
I'm not joking. Really
Okay, I want to see pictures in the show notes.
Wow, this is getting more and more interesting.
This is a safe place. Wow.
Indeed.
Tell us more about licking your plate, Mike.
Well, I start at the bottom.
To tie this in, the library's collection, science fiction writer Bruce Sterling wrote a short story called Maneki Neko, in which the beckoning cat plays a bit part. And I'm going to take this a little further down the wormhole. It's published in a collection called Ascendancies, which features an intro by our Nashville Reads author, Karen Joy Fowler. So again, that's called Ascendancies, the best of Bruce Sterling, and the short story is Maneki Neko. So we've already heard a little bit about anime. 2002, the film The Cat Returns debuted, and it's about a schoolgirl who saves a king cat, and then the king cat offers a proposal of marriage to his son. Then the girl goes on a journey through the extraordinary kingdom of cats. And so if you're like me, a crazy cat lady, you're going to fall in love with this movie. So The Cat Returns. Continuing with kitty cats, there is an actual Japanese island named Cat Heaven Island. That's the translation. Where about 100 people live, maybe 101 by the end of the summer. I'm working on it. That take care of hundreds, maybe thousands of cats. And they do so because they believe it's going to bring them good luck and good favor. So we'll link to that in the show notes. And if you are planning a trip to Japan or just enjoy armchair travel, you must check out Neelan and Deshi's Twitter feed. Now, who are Neelan and Deshi? These are two cute little kitties who are the mascots of a Japanese travel site called Jalan. And the kitties depict things to do while visiting Japan any time of the year. I happened to find a picture of them sniffing cherry blossoms. So it's very fitting. So, Japan, cats.
In the films of Chris Marker, the little cat with his hand up, what was it called again? Real fast, real loud, real confident.
Maneki Neko.
Yeah, that little cat always, at least I think in, Clint, help me out here.
Sansele?
Is it Sansele? That little cat's all through there.
You can find solar-powered lucky cats where their arms move and...
it might be creepy.
Battery-powered ones, but...
And move on the one that you have?
No, I need to get another...
Somebody's Christmas present. Yeah.
So, Greg, top that.
Ooh,
well, challenge. I just kind of wanted to add one more cat thing to the list. If you go to Tokyo, there's all these themed cafes that are really popular.
I totally was going to talk about cat cafes, too.
Cat cafe.
Fart.
You guessed it. So the one that we ended up going to was the Monster Cafe, which is a totally different story. But cat cafes, you pay to get in. It's kind of like going to a club or something. There's like a 2-drink minimum or something, but there's just the cafes is filled with cats and they can sit on your lap. You can pet them while you have a cup of coffee.
So the reason for the cat cafes is a lot of the Japanese citizens don't have room or can't have pets at home, but they still want their pet fix. Is that why they're so popular? Or?
I suppose. It's also just Japan and they're like that.
So that's when you went to the Monster Cafe, were there monsters?
I have so many questions about Monster Cafe. So was it Godzilla monsters or yokai?
Well,
it was really big and monstrous.
There
and I don't
monsters
care.
Of all different sizes and kinds. But so basically, you go to this. It's modeled kind of like a prison, and so you
monster
go in
prison,
there.
Cool.
Yeah, you go in there and like you go into your little booth and sit down with your friends to have dinner, and they lock you in there like it's a cell, and I guess you're in there with the monsters. And at some point during the dinner, there's a monster jailbreak.
Cool.
And all these monsters come running around the cafe and like they terrorize your booth and
Whoa.
Oh my God. There's alarms going on.
There.
I'd have to have lots of sake.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, and they serve you drinks in like beakers and there's like stuff like steam coming out of them and stuff. So
cool.
Yeah. Anyway, that's awesome. There's maid cafes too, but we'll talk about that later.
Oh man. After dark.
It's me? All right. So I wanted to talk about someone who may be one of the most famous living Japanese authors. In fact, he had to leave Japan in the 1980s because he had such a high profile there. He wrote a coming-of-age novel just to see if he could do it, and it became an instant classic. It's called Norwegian Wood. As I understand it, it's like the Catcher in the Rye of Japan. Everyone has to read it in high school. They made a film adaptation, which I don't really recommend. But that sounds really cool to me, like having to read Norwegian Wood in high school, even though I really liked Catcher in the Rye when I read it in high school, too. So if you haven't guessed, I'm talking about Haruki Murakami. A lot of literary types dismiss him as a pop lit writer, I think because he makes a lot of references to music his characters are listening to, whether it's the Beatles, the Smiths, or Shostakovich. It's an obsessive theme that pops up again and again in his books. At first, I thought it was kind of showy or superfluous, but it's really kind of an important part of his style. So he's obsessed with music, and in fact, he used to own and operate a famous jazz club in Tokyo called Peter Katz, which is also sort of the plot in South of the Border, West of the Sun. And Norwegian Wood deals with his time in college when he worked in a record store during turbulent 1960s Japan. So Murakami's style is to make it seem like he's talking about something really mundane. So he'll start off talking about cooking an extravagant meal for several pages, and you'll be like, what the heck is going on? This is so boring. Or interesting if you like to cook. And the next thing you'll know, he'll go chasing a cat and wind up in a parallel universe, which brings me to another recurring theme, cats. So he has another book called Kafka and the Shore that I recommend to Crystal.
Right.
Not only is it set in a library, but it also features talking cats. So that's a little teaser there. So there's a lot of surrealist elements in his books. And this scenario that I just mentioned about cats in parallel universes is from one of his best, most acclaimed novels called The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, which also deals with the flashback to World War II, and it's probably his most sprawling, acclaimed work. It's won a lot of awards, and along with a couple of his others. And this book actually began as a short story, which appears in a collection called The Elephant Vanishes. I think it's like the first story, which is a great collection and a good introduction to the author for people with short attention spans. And just this month, Murakami will publish his first short story collection in 9 years, to be titled Men Without Women. In the meantime, check out Haruki Murakami and the Music of Words, which I think is part biography and part exploration of his use of music in his books, and it's available at the library.
Those new books, you're talking about when the English translations will be out.
Yes, the English translations for both of those will come out this year.
Okay.
I'm not sure when the short story collection came out in Japan.
And did you know that this podcast once dedicated a whole episode to a discussion of 1Q84 when it came out?
Wow.
Did you know that?
But it made me read it and everything.
Fired. Fired. Fired, fired, fired.
Let's have a rebuttal on this.
But I just want to say,
it was okay.
I enjoy his books very much. I've read many of them. But that episode kind of sucked because it was so hard to explain what the plot of that book was. Like, it was like just so impossible because it was so surreal and bizarre. Like, it was impossible to express, like, for instance, like, the Nashville Reads book where it's like, what's it about? There's a girl has a sister who's a chimpanzee, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Except just ruin the book.
So much stuff happens.
Spoiler
in that
alert.
Book.
That's,
oh, fired, fired.
Oh, that's just a unicorn.
Wait,
have you ever heard of Ann Patchett before?
Wait, who's she?
She.
I've never heard of her.
In her synopsis of the book on the Nashville Reads website, she does not spoil the book because she says it's that important.
Oh.
Okay, so it's a, okay. Oh, okay. Okay. So me and Ann Patchett always do this like best of the year list, and they're always the same. So I don't know who she is, but we read the same books. And we like the same books.
She's got great taste.
Ann Patchett, I know who you are. So
besties.
You've done programs with me here at the library. Okay, but no, but in the 3-sentence description of the book in the library catalog, it lets it slip. That there's a chimpanzee sister. So that's my defense.
I'm just giving you
in the file or not the Murakami. There is no chimpanzee sister in the Murakami.
Well, I haven't read
just
all
declare.
Of Murakami's.
Yeah,
books.
You know,
fair enough. There
could be. I haven't read them all either, but there could be, right? Hmm. And I didn't say this at the beginning, but today's show is going to be about Japanese stuff.
Oh, we should ask the question at the end.
Better late than never, right? And just like, so Mike and Greg, you guys actually, speak a little Japanese. Or am I just lying?
Well, I lived in China, so I speak more Chinese. It's just a different country.
Okay, listen.
Breaking that down for us, thanks.
I'm the dumbest person that works at the library, but I'm not that dumb.
Wow.
I don't speak hardly any Japanese. I traveled in Japan for 2 weeks, which is all I could afford, and that's when I picked up whatever.
So the answer was no, I don't know any Japanese.
I just bought a card game that will teach me Japanese.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, Japanese the card.
I don't.
Just in case you want.
I kickstarted it. We can link it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, you remember what it's called?
Japanese the card game.
Japanese card. That's not bad.
$10 I'll get every expansion they ever make.
Is Veronica Mars going to come to Nashville? Speaking of Kickstarter.
That was my tickle my fancy. Just wrecked
in
it.
2 weeks?
Okay, well, what I want to reckon was tickle my fancy. There was one other thing. Oh, Mike.
Oh, what?
You're not fired. I'm going to buy you a coffee because I started this fired thing, and I was like, who's gonna tell me I'm fired? Who's going to tell me I'm fired?
If he hadn't, I would have, but you would. All right,
so.
So a couple of years ago, I went to go see this action movie. It sounded really cool. It was called The Raid Redemption from Indonesia, an Indonesian action movie. I was like, well, you know, I know nothing about Indonesia. How bad could it be? And it turned out it was amazing. It was awesome. My jaw dropped so many times that, you know, like I had to like put water in it so I could get like moisture back. Let's see. So when they announced that there was a sequel coming out a couple months ago, I went and then got some oxygen and then got super excited. Saw the trailer so many times that, like, you know, I wanted to get like the Bach or no Handel's theme that's during it because, you know, that to be all snooty while a girl is beating people to death with claw hammers. So awesome. So anyway, I just thought, it comes out everywhere on April 11th. The first one's about this SWAT team that goes in, like, this slum building in Jakarta. And, like, there's this, like, gang, like, slumlord or ganglord guy, like, the top floor. And they're trying to, like, sneak up, like, every floor. But then, like, his gang finds out that they're there. And so they try to, like, shoot him. And then they run out of bullets. And then they try to stab him. And it's like, oh, yeah. And then they have to, like, beat their way up like all the floors to get to the ganglord guy. And the sequel, like, one of the cops from the first movie tries to infiltrate the Jakarta underworld. And to tie in with the theme of everything else this month, the Jakarta underworld is run by native Indonesians and the Yakuza, or Japanese gangsters.
They're rowdy.
So I'm just trying to summarize the Raid Redemption in like one sentence, right? The SWAT team has to go through a whole building, but the guys in the building know that they're coming. And then it's like 2 hours of extremely crazy graphic violence as they fight their way to the top.
It is shocking how violent. Like, they use a martial art called Penchat Silat, which is this Indonesian martial art that I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. It's crazy, insanely fast. That's one of those, like, that they're fast forward the film, right? No one moves that fast. No, really. People move that fast. It's like, it's awesome.
Yeah, and it's become one of the great, like, cult action movies, you know, the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, if anybody wants me to recommend, like, an action film, I'm like, you need to see The Raid Redemption. It's incredible.
And if you aren't here, his eyes just got really serious and crazy.
That's right. I'm normally, like, sleepy Garfield eyes. Well, super cool, you guys. It's awesome.
I'm going to pull Amanda on this one. I'm not going to see that. Not gonna see that. But no. They play it every couple of years at the Bell Court. And I'm like, nope.
Okay, if it's too violent for Brian, I'm just gonna like go shopping that night or something.
Charles Bronson reminds me of my father, and therefore I don't like action movies. Who wants to go next?
Okay, tickling my fancy this episode is a band called Future Islands. Don't confuse them with the Lonely Island. It's Future Islands. Originally from North Carolina, they're now based out of Baltimore. The band consists of a keyboard player, bassist, they have a touring drummer, and one of the most magnetic frontmen I've ever experienced. Now imagine if maybe a young, kind of pudgy Marlon Brando decided to quit acting and become a singer. Or if you can't follow me on that journey, just think of your theater major classmate.
Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Sure. Who uses his skills to express his songs. He's a little bit maybe Jack Black or Meatloaf. But anyway.
Philip Seymour Hoffman? Young Marlon Brando. Anyway, sorry.
So I know you're not really picturing what I'm describing. So go online and watch their performance on Late Night with David Letterman. It was March 3rd. If you just search for Future Islands, you're going to see this. It's been viewed hundreds of thousands of times, and I think I've watched it about 100 times. And it's just something else, I got to tell you. They have a new album that's coming out next week at the time that we're recording this. That's March 26th, I believe. It's not going to be available through Hoopla or Freegal, so we're maybe working on trying to get the physical CD, but I know you have been able to stream it. There's a full concert that they performed in Croatia online if you're interested, if you want a bigger chunk of this amazing experience. So, Future Islands. The song they played on Letterman is called Seasons Change.
Those Croatian intellectual property pirates need taken down.
I know.
Ruining the internet. What's happening over there, Greg?
Food, but is that the band that you saw here in Nashville or no? You
said no. No, I've just seen them online. I hope they come back to town. Apparently, they have been here a few times.
Well, I want to talk about a new restaurant, relatively new, that's opened in East Nashville. It's called 210 Jack. As far as I know, it's Nashville's first izakaya, which is Japan's version of a neighborhood-style pub. It's located across from Rose Pepper. So they'll have fancy cocktails, kind of a bar in the middle with sake and shochu and all that stuff. But they'll also have other Japanese snacks and comfort foods. So it's part ramen house. And this isn't your college meal plan ramen. This is like quality ramen bowls and get it. They'll also have yakitori, which is, I believe the English translation is small bites of skewered meat or vegetables grilled and seasoned. It's amazing. They have a version of it in China, and I sorely, sorely miss it. Hopefully it'll live up.
We have an Izakaya cookbook that I've checked out recently. It's quite good.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, next time Mike's bringing us all food, because he keeps talking about food, and I'm hungry.
Susan downstairs is like, you need to cook things for everybody.
I know, right?
I'm like,
So it was all I could do to get out of bed and come to work this morning, because I am depressed. Because it is now, as we record this, post the release of Veronica Mars, the movie. It is not playing in Nashville anywhere that I could find.
That's going to the Belcourt.
Yeah.
When's it coming to the Belcourt?
Next week. Next Saturday, I believe.
Because I looked at the Belcourt. I thought maybe I didn't see it on the schedule, but I'm not a Belcourt aficionado. Guess who's going to the Belcourt?
Belcourt to rescue.
Well, because I thought, I looked at my trusty Hollywood Regal 27. No suit for me. And I thought, Green Hills might have it, because it's kind of, it was the Kickstarter movie, whatever. No suit for me there. And then there were all these beautiful pictures of people in Australia getting to watch it, and I didn't get to watch it, and I was very sad. But now that you have redeemed my hope in the human race for the 28th at the Belcourt, I'm going to go get in line right now.
About
the
28th of March, if you're listening to this in April, you lose.
That's right. That's true. It won't yes! I can get in before everybody finds out about it.
That's right.
Okay.
As you know, or might not know, a new Godzilla is coming out.
Godzilla?
And I've got to admit, I'm somewhat intrigued. The new one is directed by Garth Edwards, who directed an offbeat monster movie called Monsters. But do you realize that we have the original Godzilla in our collection, and we have the Criterion version, which features both the 1954 Japanese version, along with the Americanized version, Godzilla King of Monsters. This came out in 1958. I highly recommend both, but please give the 1954 Japanese version directed by Ishiro Honda a shot. You won't be disappointed. Just as we've been talking about Kurosawa, Ishiro Honda, and I would like to have sat in on some dinner conversations or something, and Akira Kurosawa were great friends.
Cool.
As a matter of fact, he helped with Dreams, Ishiro Honda. He even filmed off of his storyboards. He filmed one of the segments in Dreams. I just found that out today.
Cool.
And so one final note while we're on Godzilla, or I'm on Godzilla, go to YouTube, type in Bambi Meets Godzilla. If you've never seen this short, it's 2 minutes of your life, and it's well worth it.
Going to give We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves the Siskel and Ebert treatment. Mike, did you read it?
Nope.
You're fired. Crystal, did you read it?
Not yet.
Greg, did you read it?
Yes, I did.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up.
Why? You want to get one, two sentences why? Yes, no, on the spot?
It's a little on the spot, but I...
Faster.
Oh, you're fired too. Good family story, good plot twist, good science bits. I don't know.
They get nominated for Nebula Award. Did you know that?
I saw that, yeah.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Why would it get nominated for Nebula Award? I can't figure that
out. There's no nebulas in that book.
Exactly. That's like,
it's very puzzling.
Exactly. Amanda, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs sideways. Started way thumbs down, but ended with the pulled us up sideways.
Okay.
So, yeah, I didn't. The characters bothered me at the beginning, but it did redeem itself slightly. So,
Bill.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
Also fired.
You were fired last time, too, because I don't know why. I screamed fired at you for some reason in the middle of the podcast. Oh, yeah, you fumbled Lucky Day Collection.
Oh.
So I said, just saying it. You mm-hmm. So I fired
I you. Love the Lucky Day Collection.
It's an easy idea.
That was the gist of what he was trying to say, which he did eventually say. So we're talking about the Nashville Reads book.
Oh, Lord, no.
Triple fired.
That was my reaction mentally.
So I gotta say, I love that book.
Nobody gets killed in it.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean,
Brian's not mentioning this, or maybe he's gonna, but you should see his video review.
I need to watch that. I'm excited.
Okay, now I have some thoughts about that review, but I'm gonna save it to later when we really get going. But you know, I love the book. You know, I didn't think that I would, and I like the way she packed so much into one little book. And you know, even after the big spoiler, there's still more stuff at the end. It's all in the video review. I'm not gonna repeat myself, but I loved it. It was awesome. Thumbs up. No, I wanted to ask you though, Amanda, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
You are from. Do you want to admit that?
I did. I went to school in Bloomington, Indiana,
and that's.
That might be part of my problem with it.
And that's where the book is set.
That's where the book is set. That's where the family lives.
And does John Cougar Mellencamp show up anywhere?
He does not. There, no, and he should. Story. Because he builds little houses. Yeah, he lives in Bloomington.
I don't know if there was a little ditty about Jack and
little
Diane.
Little pink houses.
I know, right? Yeah, little pink houses. Yeah.
And, I mean, did you feel that it captured the essence of Bloomington?
Yes and no. I mean, I wouldn't read what they had written if they didn't keep saying Bloomington, 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 Bloomington 85,000 times throughout that. I probably wouldn't. It was just small town America, which Bloomington is. I mean, it's one of those towns that has like 2,000 real people that live there. And then when the school's in session, it has like 40,000 people that live there. So, I mean, it did capture that. But I don't know that it was specifically Bloomington, Indiana. Never mentioned the music school once, which...
Exactly.
Why bother?
I was waiting for Breaking Away.
So yeah, breaking no away bike reference. Race. I'm yeah. Seriously, come on.
Yeah. So the only bike reference is it was when she was at UC Davis.
And they stole her bike, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a big bike mecca, too.
Yeah.
But anyway. But hey, what have they been listening to? Those with the headphones in their ears. That was way too meta.
No, we lost us all.
What is this? What are we doing here today?
Pondering life.
What is this?
Brian's singing. It's very pretty.
Theme song? Yeah.
What is this?
Psychotic Break.
Popmatic Podcast.
You've been listening to... What have you been listening to?
You've been listening to the Popmatic Podcast.
All right, Greg got it. Hey, who did the theme music? Somebody just...
The Popmatic Podcast singers?
Popmatic Podcast players.
Who wrote the
theme? That would have been better, thank you. That's alliteration. I struggle. I'm fired.
Who wrote the theme? Who wrote the theme music?
Adam Dean.
I said Crystal's husband.
Adam Dean wrote the theme music. All right, and I've heard this thing called iTunes. I don't know. I heard if you give us a good rating on iTunes, other people will know about the show and listen to it. Besides Mike's dad on the episode that Mike is on.
Hi, Mike's dad.
Yes. So, but if you want more information about the Popmatic Podcast or all the other awesome things the library does, you can go to www.library.nashville.org. All right.
And I'd like to point out that Bill has it written down in front of him so that we don't screw it up this time. Because we always screw that part up.
You should mention that because I was all amazed for a second.
I know, right?
One more time. What have you been listening to?
The Popmatic Podcast.
Oh, yes.
Bill nails it and redeems himself.
Teamwork. I love it.